Wild Tales is sponsored by Cotswold Outdoor. When we're out in the elements, we're in our element. And outside retail expert Cotswold Outdoor is helping more of us to get out with the right kit. Thanks also to their support, the National Trust is helping walking communities to access the UK's outside spaces. And we're working to fix 15,000 kilometres of paths and trails by 2030 for everyone to enjoy. Find your element with Cotswold Outdoor.
Easter Saturday, March the 30th, 1918. At Moray Wood, near Amiens, the Canadian Cavalry Brigade prepare for action. The Germans hold the ridge. If they break through, the Allied front could fall. Leading the signal troop rides General Jack Seeley on his horse, Warrior. He turns to his men, raises his voice above the wind, and commands, "Fire on both sides! We are going in!" Chaos ensues. Shells explode. Bullets scream through the air. General Jack Seeley and his horse, Warrior, ride into the storm, red pennant in hand, the squadron thundering close behind. The battle that follows will be remembered as one of the deadliest cavalry charges of the First World War.
Millions of animals served in the First World War, but few became legends. Warrior, the horse who carried General Jack Seeley through some of the bloodiest battles of the war, was one of them. Welcome to Wild Tales. I'm Rosie Holdsworth, and in this episode we hand over to historian James Grasby for Warrior the Warhorse.
The First World War raged from 1914 to 1918, drawing in nations across Europe and beyond, where more than 65 million soldiers faced the mud, the blood, and the misery of trench warfare. Alongside them, millions of horses, mules, and donkeys went to the front, hauling supplies, carrying the wounded, and charging into battle. Few ever came home. Among them was General Jack Seeley and his legendary horse, Warrior. Together, they would ride through some of the bloodiest battles of the war. And in today's episode, we head to the Isle of Wight to follow in their footsteps. It is a glorious spring April day, and I'm standing in the grounds of stunning Mottiston Manor on the Isle of Wight. Now, this place is nestled in a very sheltered valley, not far from the sea, but surrounded by rolling, lush greenery. Mottiston Manor was first recorded, I believe, in the Domesday Book in 1086. And today, I'm here to walk an unusual and surprising trail, one that traces the steps of a forgotten hero from the First World War, someone who returned from the Western Front against all odds and unscathed. But before I set out, I'm going to step inside the manor to meet somebody who one wouldn't naturally associate with this story. I'm just going to come in through this front door with a two-centred arch, past some Gothic lettering, a wonderful inscription, through another low door into an ancient room with magnificent timbered ceiling. But in front of me is the most striking picture. What a beautiful horse! A beautiful horse with a gallant, what looks like a general in uniform, and behind, chalky cliffs, which I guess are the Isle of Wight. I don't know. It says 1920s, but I wonder who this chap is. As I stand there pondering, I hear footsteps behind me. I recognise your face. Bruff Scott, what a pleasure to meet you.
It's lovely to be here because obviously I've known this picture since I can remember pictures. And that's Grandpa on his horse Warrior, which has become quite famous, really, as a sort of symbol of the First World War.
Bruff, it's an astonishing story. I mean, to so many people, you are the face of British racing, TV presenter, writer. I had no idea that you, as well, are the grandson of General Jack Seeley. And I've got this relationship with Mottiston.
And in fact, Grandpa, who is an extraordinary Victorian Edwardian figure that you couldn't invent now, but he went to the Boer War with a white horse of his called Maharaja. When he got to the port, so you can't take that white horse, it's bad for camouflage, so he took it round the back and dyed it brown. I mean, literally, and it went right through the war with him.
Between 1899 and 1902, the Boer War raged in South Africa. It was here that Jack Seeley learnt the realities of battle on horseback.
And when he was looking for a replacement to that horse, when he got very old, he saw a thoroughbred mare, and he galloped down after it and bought it there and then off the man. She was called Cinderella, and she was incredibly sweet. She used to walk round behind him like a dog. My mother can remember sliding off her back. She was really sweet. And her son was Warrior.
From the day he is born, Warrior is Jack Seeley's constant companion in both war and peace. They cross the Channel together in 1914, and for the following 4 years, they endure the mud and hardships of the Western Front. 2 decades later, in 1935, Jack Seeley publishes a book about him called My Horse Warrior. By then, Warrior is 27 and a living reminder of the bond they share.
That book, My Horse Warrior, it's a love letter to this horse. He would have remembered the last canter he did alongside his son who got killed, Frank. He remembered him with his first wife who died. He remembered him through that picture there of the whole family. The horse was his connection. It's a testament to a quite unique equine life, and therefore I'm really proud that he recorded it.
But Warrior's story isn't just published in books and remembered in portraits. It's written into this very landscape. And today we set out to trace his hoofprints on a circular footpath around Mottistone, known as the Warrior Trail. Bruff, we're just rising up out of the valley from that ancient house. Up a deep and sunken track. This is the beginning of the trail, I guess.
It's a footpath now, but of course Warrior and Grandpa would have ridden up here to the downs. So you can uplift yourself and your mood by going up on the downs. And when I come down here, which I still do a lot, I go up on the downs and then my spirit lifts.
And that moment on the Isle of Wight, famously, where the chalk downs stop beside the sea, where they've been broken away into those incredible cliffs that appear in the background of that picture we're just looking at.
That particular chalk cliff is called Tennyson Down, because that's where Tennyson used to walk up, purportedly reciting some of his great verse. We're walking up towards the downs, but actually down below, a little bit south of here, is Yafford Mill, where Warrior was born. We're talking about 1908. And Grandpa was a minister then, and there was a very stuffy private secretary. And the guy at the stables sent a message to Grandpa, which was handed over by this very stuffy civil servant. The message was, Cinderella had a booming boy today, mother and son really well. Lovely phrase that Grandpa said. Well, Yafford is one of the most delightful places one could possibly choose to be born.
Lovely. And before us, a bridle way. We're under the shade of a sycamore in flower. Which way are we heading, Bruff?
We're going southwest up onto Brookdown. Mm. And out ahead of us, we'll see the totemic chalk cliffs of Freshwater Down.
And it's chalky underfoot, isn't it?
It's already, you can see the chalk.
Bruff, the view is beginning to open.
Below us is Sidling Paul, which is where Warrior ran with his mother Cinderella as a yearling and a two-year-old, and indeed where Grandpa got on him the first time and he immediately bucked him off. And then you go on down past the church, where actually in 1917 Grandpa came back from the war, and Cinderella, he was particularly close to the mother of Warrior, and he went to see her. She got pretty old by then. When he whistled, she came running up to him and very obviously recognised him. The next day was a Sunday. They'd walk up there to the church, and when they walked up, Cinderella was lying there dead, and she had kept herself alive to see him again. I know my mother was very struck by that image, and so was my grandfather. And again, it's always danger, this anthropological putting human sentiments into horses, but they still have sentiments. And that one was a very much, I think, stay alive for something and then it's over. And I like to think of that.
As we leave Sidling Paul, we follow the lane past Brook House, where Jack and Warrior are based until 1925. From here, the path drops down towards Brook Bay, a stretch of coastline long associated with shipwrecks and treacherous seas. And it's here that Jack first realises Warrior has the makings of a warhorse.
Bruff, we're down in the beach, and this beach has a special place in Warrior's story, hasn't it?
It wasn't called Warrior entirely by chance. The likelihood of him being a cavalry horse was always there. And if you're going to be a cavalry horse, you're going to have to be brave. And so what he did from a very young age, he went and stood him in the waves. Grandpa had a very vivid memory, is that he was trembling, but he would stand there, even though the waves came in and hit him. One of them even knocked him over. But he realised then, he said, that this horse was brave because he would stand and he would face something. And of course, later in life, he stood and faced shells and rifle fire with men behind him and was an inspiration, as you can imagine.
As the waves break over his horse's legs, Jack Seeley senses Warrior's destiny. At six, Warrior is sent to military school in Rutland. Then, in August 1914, as war breaks out in Europe, Jack and Warrior set sail to Le Havre to face the battlefields of France. The following year, when Jack Seeley takes command of the Canadian Cavalry Brigade, Warrior returns briefly to England for further training. But by Christmas, they are back at the front. And from then until the war's end, Warrior never leaves it. Through the battles at the Somme, the horror at Ypres, and the endless mud of Passchendaele.
There is traumatic and famous early film footage of mules and horses in the deep mud of Passchendaele getting stuck down to the tops of their legs in mud, struggling to get out. I mean, the mud was a dreadful killer of pack horses and cavalry horses. Was that something that Warrior experienced at first hand?
Not for the first time. He was lucky to be a general's horse, or he certainly wouldn't have survived, because it was usually a hard area where you could probably be all right, but if you strayed off it for any reason, you'd go into the mud, it'd be so difficult that you couldn't pull the horse out. It would take too many people. Quite early on, they would decide, relieve the pain, shoot the horse, take the saddle off. Warrior went in, but he had general and he had people around him, and they really heaved and pulled and they got him out. But if he'd been an ordinary horse, he probably wouldn't have got out.
For Warrior, it's a lucky escape.
I did count it up once. I think it's seven times when at least 50-50 he should have got killed. I mean, very early on, bullets coming through. The horse next to him being shot, that happened twice. Him standing nose to nose with another horse. And while he was standing there, the other horse has a bullet through it.
Time and again, Warrior defies death. Bullets, collapsing buildings, shells landing close by. By now, it's becoming clear Warrior is no ordinary horse.
Bruff, take me to France in 1918 and the charge at Moray.
The Canadian cavalry were basically circling the German advance. Big scare was that the Germans got to Amiens and fundamentally it could be over. Grandpa was in charge of Canadian cavalry with about 1,000 men and horses, and he was told not to get too involved, and he saw the Germans had broken through, so he decided, regardless of any instructions, he needed to take it back. The important thing, we had a signal group which were the people to go up in front, so spearhead of 16 people, and you planted a big pennant, because then the units coming galloping up behind would know one lot had to go left of the pennant, the other would go right of the pennant. But of course, being Grandpa and Warrior, Warrior led it. But anyway, they came up and six of the guys got shot. You are literally galloping into bullets. Imagine the scene, you've got 500, 600 horses galloping up behind you, and all going round, and then actually entering this wood, leave your horses, you then march in with bayonets fixed, you know, thrusting and disemboweling, things like that. It was hand-to-hand fighting. And one of the German reports, it was hell in Moray Wood, and I bet it was. But, you know, the fact is, warriors survived it.
The battle at Moray Wood becomes one of the last great cavalry actions of the First World War. Later, General Seely would write, "I knew that moment to be the supreme moment of my life. Warrior is one of the lucky ones. Over 8 million horses, donkeys and mules perish in the First World War. Many drown in the mud, are hit by gunfire, or simply die of cold and exhaustion." A month later, General Jack Seely is gassed, and as he recuperates, Warrior stays by his side. By Christmas that year, the war is finally over. Jack and Warrior both return home to Brooke on the Isle of Wight. In 1925, they move to Mottistone, where Warrior spends the rest of his days.
Bruff, that was a wonderful walk. A wonderful walk, tracking the story of Warrior and your grandfather. And we now come back to a really lovely panelled room somewhere in the north part of this great manor house. And we've got a pot of tea.
Much needed.
I've got the book that your grandfather wrote and that you republished. And there's this lovely photograph here of your grandfather on Warrior outside this house. What's going on here?
It's typical in many ways. 1934, Grandpa is in his 60s. Warrior is 26 years old. And Queen Mary's there. And she would have been at Cowes. And Grandpa is in his Cowes yachting kit, which is a yachting cap, blue blazer and white slacks. And what the Queen clearly would have done, saying, "Oh, I'd love to see Warrior." So they brought Warrior out of the field, and he would have said, "Look, here he is," and he would have jumped up on him. So he's riding Warrior bareback, and the Queen is patting him.
So Warrior, a great celebrity. And by the sound of it, Warrior lived to an extraordinary age. He went on and on.
It's one of the most extraordinary things of all, really, and there's a terrific picture of Grandpa and Warrior outside Morrison Manor, with Grandpa riding him, when Grandpa's 70 and Warrior's 30. I mean, 30 is very old for a horse, and he's had the saddest of ends. 1941, things are very, very rough in England, and, you know, it looks like we might well lose the war. And Warrior's getting very ropey, and through the winter, Warrior was having to have a lot of oats, things to keep him going. And Grandpa had to decide, look, people are going to grumble, so we're going to have to put him down.
During the Second World War, rationing means food and fodder is desperately scarce. Non-essential animals, retired horses, pets, even zoo animals were put down, as there simply wasn't enough to keep them alive. It was in this climate, in 1941, that Warrior, by then 32 years old, is finally laid to rest.
This is the saddest bit. He said he couldn't bear to be there when the vet came to put him down. But he wrote in his notebook, Warrior had been put down, he said, to quote the poet Byron about his dog Boatswain, "I do not believe he'll be denied in heaven the soul he had on earth." Which is rather a lovely thing to have written in your diary.
After more than three decades at Jack's side, Warrior's death makes national news, with the Times publishing an obituary and the Evening Standard running the headline, "The Horse the Germans Couldn't Kill." But Warrior's story doesn't end there. In 1935, Jack Seely writes a book about his beloved charger, My Horse Warrior, a love letter to their bond. And in 2012, Bruff republishes the book, keeping his grandfather's words alive for a new generation. In 2014, 100 years after the outbreak of World War I, Warrior is posthumously awarded the PDSA Dickin Medal, the Animal's Victoria Cross.
It was an extremely proud moment for me and my family, because Warrior was given this medal on behalf of all the animals who suffered in the First War. And it was a wonderful thing, and the recognition that that horse, born at Yafford, 2 miles from here at Mottistone, who spent all of his life in the Isle of Wight, with the minor exception of 4 years when, according to Grandpa, he won the war single-handed, that he should be honoured on behalf of all the others is something that we are all very, very proud.
From the cliffs of the Isle of Wight to the battlefields of France, Warrior's story is one of loyalty, courage, and survival against all odds. As we honour the soldiers who never came home, let us also remember the animals who stood beside them.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Wild Tales. I hope you enjoyed it. If Warrior's Tale has inspired you, you'll find more history stories in our sister podcast, Back When. I'm Rosie Holdsworth. I'll see you next time. Wild Tales is sponsored by Cotswold Outdoor, your outside retailer and epic guides to adventure. Quick breathers, calming walks, or heart-pounding hikes, we feel better when we get out more. Find quality kit and 50 years of outdoor wisdom. Plus, National Trust supporters get 15% off walking kit in-store and online. Feel in your element, in the elements, at cotswoldoutdoor.com.